Hey everyone, thanks for listening to this interview. Brett and I are back. When we first did this interview series, we thought, well, it's going to be one interview. We're going to cover a lot of ground and it's going to be something that we put into people's hands. But what we quickly discovered, thanks to my team actually implementing the ideas that we learned from Brett, is hey, there's a few more things that we wouldn't mind asking him. So I asked some of my leadership team as well to review the first interview. We went through it. We came up with some really good questions that kind of get you to the next step. Because while that first interview was very comprehensive, there's still a few things. The reality of building a team and bringing people into your organization and getting them all working on the same page and paying them and giving them incentives and all of that, there's some little rough edges that we left out of the first interview. So this interview is number two. And if you haven't heard the first interview, go back and listen to it first because this is a little deeper content now, where we get into some real specifics. Just to give you an overview of what Brett and I will be talking about today, this is about how to pay your team. What do you actually send them out doing? What are they tasked? Do they have cash in their pocket, or do they have a credit card or gift cards in their pocket? And when they get back, how do they track whose inventory is whose? And how do you reward them and incent them for the hard work that they've done? Versus maybe someone else who didn't show up as much this week because they were busy, and so someone else carried the weight that week. Do they get extra reward for that? How's that track? So we're going to talk a little bit about some of those issues, and not that Brett has this whole thing figured out. This is a pioneering industry. Literally, this type of business did not exist even a few years ago. So we're off into some new territory here. But Brett is the guy. Between Brett and I, hopefully, we can help you figure out and put a structure behind a business where, to sum it up as neatly as I can, you've got people out there shopping for you, finding great inventory that you can flip for high profit on eBay or Amazon. How'd I do, Brett? What do you think?
That's perfect. And the key point here is to cover every little detail that I've seen in probably in the last 2.5 years, that'd be about 4 days worth of a phone call. Every time we do one of these, the cool thing is if people implement them, they're going to grow, but they're also going to have more questions, which is a great sign of growth in action. So it's great. It's really cool that, your team went out, executed on the phone call that we had before, and now are coming back with more questions, because that shows me, and I read through the questions, that they did what we talked about. So, it's always a good thing to have your next round of questions ready, because it's showing that you're growing and you're, implementing the strategies that are out
Perfect.
there.
And that's a nice segue, too, to point out the fact that you've agreed, and my team and I have agreed. And when I say my team, I'm talking about everyone from my mom, who runs my eBay Amazon business for me, to the people she's
Right.
hiring, and the moderators, the coaches. We've got paid staff that helps with our support services. They're all in one big happy Facebook group talking about this kind of stuff all the time. And I know you've got Facebook groups as well, Brett, but we're saying we're making ourselves available after this interview. So you may be listening to this well after it was recorded, but we're still here for you. And we want to help you answer those questions. And we're in a part of a community. It's not just Brett and I doing this. We're part of a large community of people who are running these kinds of businesses around the world. So jump into the community. All the details are on the thank you page or the download page where you got this audio. Go back there. You'll see a link to Facebook groups and other resources. And over time, I'm sure there'll be more things there. So if we don't hit your question today, you can ask it and someone will help you. So with no further introduction needed, because we went through a lot of good stuff in the first interview, let's just jump right into some of the questions that my team and some others have sent to me that will help them on that next step. And I like starting out with this one because we're talking about trusting somebody and sending them out with a wad of cash or a credit card in their pocket and actually saying, hey, go find profitable inventory. What do they actually take with them? Are they taking a credit card? Do you teach them how to properly use it? And are you collecting the points? Is it like one business card that everybody passes around? Or, how does that work? I know you're doing some yard sale as well, and that's, of course, going to be cash. But
Right.
like if they go into a retail store, what are they taking with them? And how do you possibly take advantage of having a team, a large team, and all of that going through the same account? Give me some logistical details there.
Well, I can tell you starting off, I was super scared. So if you're scared, that's okay. And the second part of it is, remember, when you're building out a team or just working with people in general, the first step with everything is trust, right? You have to be able to trust these people. Because if the trust isn't there in the beginning, you don't necessarily want to hand them anything. So first, start with the trust, you know, have that foundation. Second is, it's an it depends question. So if we're focusing specifically on retail, right, my team actually most of the time, we buy with discounted gift cards. And so at first I started with what you're talking about, Jim. I had a company credit card that everyone used. And that ended up, I actually left some money on the table with it. What I ended up finding out was that most retail stores have what's called discounted gift cards. And you can find those on giftcardgranny.com. It'll basically sort out the discounted gift cards for you. That's a much better way and easier way to manage your cash and everything like that with teams. Because basically then you can allocate a certain amount of discounted gift cards to each team member and then see how they perform with it, as opposed to running, you know, a mass credit card or, you know, handing out tons of cash or debit cards or anything like that. So for us, we found, I'd say in the 90% now, we buy discounted gift cards up front and then distribute them to our team at our, you know, best stores. And then those discounted gift cards typically over time give us more of a discount than any credit card program or anything like that out there. So I started with credit cards. Then we actually moved to a debit card. Now we're doing discounted gift cards, which you can find most of them on a database called giftcardgranny.com. And then from there, you can see who you want to purchase them from.
Well, give me a specific example. Let me set up this scenario for you. I know, like, for example, here where we live, there's a store called Kohl's, and they have a, if you
right.
use your Kohl's credit card, you get a significant discount at the register on top of whatever other
right.
discounts you may have received otherwise. Are you kind of missing out if you go with the gift card route versus using the in-store credit card?
Well, from what I know from most discounts, the in-store credit card, you'd end up it's kind of a give and take. So here's it's just my opinion on it. I've used Kohl's credit card before and everything like that. When you're growing your teams and the scalability of it, it really for us became better to do the upfront discounted gift cards. If you're running the credit card model, which again we've done before, and it comes down to numbers, if that's the store you hit all the time and you run the numbers and it's truly a better model, then the way you run the credit card program is you have really your top buyers who handle the credit card, and every other person who comes through your ranks, they shouldn't have access to your credit card until they've really proven out as a buyer. So for us, we never gave them access until we knew that they were going to be with us for the long run. So typically, we would put them on about a 30 to 60 day trial. And then once they proved on that 30 to 60 day trial, we would then hand them, you know, a credit card. So logistically, really all you would do is you would get their name on a credit card, you know, add them as a person on there. Again, in the end, we actually felt more comfortable with the discounted gift cards, and that's the one we ended up running. So we did both. In the end, we ended up sticking with the discounted gift cards because we ran the numbers, and that gave us more. Because you can still combine the Kohl's cash, you can still combine all that stuff. We saved most of Kohl's gift card, or I'm sorry, most of Kohl's purchases with our credit card for online purchases.
Oh, cool. So you can,
yeah.
you could still take advantage of that online and get a lot of the same
right.
stuff. But you're keeping the credit cards in the office. You're sending people
Correct.
Out with gift cards. And now the way this Gift Card Granny site works and the other gift card websites work, correct me if I'm wrong, but you might find someone out there selling a $50 Best Buy or Sears gift card for $43, for example. So you'll snag
Correct.
It and it's worth 50, right? And you can take
right.
it to the
yeah.
store and spend it. So people cash in their gift cards and you're sitting there just, you know, gathering them because you got a lot of shopping to do. You're getting your discount right there when you buy the card. Is that pretty much how those sites work?
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of times what people don't realize is the different programs that go on at retail stores have caveats, right? They have, well, that can only be used on this, and if you hit this limit, whatever. When you come in with a discounted gift card, that's all. It's all off the table. That discount will automatically be applied no matter what because it's a gift card.
Right.
So what
it's
we found
card.
Was we were running into a lot of problems when we were scaling this out and spending, you know, $5,000 or $3,000 or even $1,000 at a store. And we'd go to use the card, and they go, okay, well, that works with this, but not this. And I kind of said, okay, I can't build a team that way.
Right,
Because remember,
okay.
I'm always trying to remove myself, and I'd just be getting these phone calls all the time.
Yeah.
So that's why we move forward with the gift cards, because then I know for sure, no matter what, they're going to get that extra 6%
A gift
on top
card
of
is
everything else.
basically cash in their pocket for the store they're going into use. They could it, there's no restrictions on it. You can buy
Exactly.
anything in
And
the store. Right.
it's less of a risk with a team member, because you hand them $1,000 cash, they can do a lot of things with that cash. You hand them $1,000 to Kohl's, the worst thing they can do to you is go buy some stuff from Kohl's. Buy a
Yeah,
couple blenders for
they buy
themselves.
their kids some shoes while they're there. Right, exactly.
Right.
Okay, cool. Well, so one of the other questions that's come up is 1099 versus employees.
Right.
Contract versus, how are you handling that? If you had to give us, and I know a lot of this is dependent on, consult your accountants and everyone's business is different, but just without any without holding you to any legal standard, like, hey, we're going to take your advice and go run with it. But how do you set your business up? Everyone's going to be a little different, but how is yours set up?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And to let everyone know, we run both. So we have people who are on payroll, and then we have people who are just 1099 team members. And I don't mean just, they're essential team members for us too. And the best way for me to answer it is what I found is, so you got to remember, I have an actual office. We have people who come in every day. Like right now I'm at my house, but there's probably 12 to 14 people in our office right now, who are buyers and processors. And so those people who are with us, the majority, and this was passed down from us, from our accountant, this advice. Those people who are spending the majority of the time with us, and we're most likely their only employer or the person that they work for, those are the people who we put on payroll. Now there's some goods and bads with payroll. That's what you're calling an employee. The good is it builds more of a team atmosphere, and they feel like they're in it for the long run. I think it's just a mental thing. I didn't really anticipate it, but over time I've seen that those people have a different type of buy-in than the 1099 people. So that's a positive. Negatives are anytime you slip into employees and payroll, it's just a whole different monster. And so you got to be ready as a business to allocate cash towards that. If you're not, stick with the 1099 right now. Because I underestimated what that looks like. And you really got to be able to cash flow at a point where you could support those people on payroll, workers' comp, everything like that. So that's my explanation on people who are employees. Basically, if they're working for you 30 plus hours a week and you're their only employer or only way that they're basically making income, they will most likely be considered your employee. A person who's 1099, those are more of the free spirits, I call them. They're the people who don't want to be tied down, and they don't ever want to be called an employee. And so you got to be able to recognize that in people. And those are the people who go out and do a lot of our garage sales, because that's mainly what they're doing. So they're making a ton of money for working 4 hours on a Saturday, and that's all they want to do. They want to go out garage sale for 4 hours, buy a couple $1,000 worth of stuff, come to us. We actually buy the way the 1099 works with them. We buy the products from them, so we don't pay them hourly. They are like the first step in the supply chain. They're coming to us. We pay a 10% margin on top of it. And so they make some good cash on that, and then we take it and resell it. So that's where they make their money. They're almost like a distributor or wholesaler to us, to our company. That's the way our 1099 team members work.
Interesting. And I didn't realize you were doing that. So that instantly brings up a couple human nature questions in my mind. And one of them is, what keeps them from, like, oh, wow, this is a great find, I'm keeping this one? What keeps us from doing that? And the other one is, a 10%, how'd you come up with that number? Do they all like that number? I'm thinking, if they know full well that you're going to take this $100 item and sell it for $800, are they happy only making 10 bucks on it? Are they truly happy knowing that, you're about to make 700 bucks and they just made 10? Is there any kind of other profit sharing incentive built into that. But as you're thinking about those two questions, Brett, let me just throw one last caveat just for legal purposes here. We've not given anyone legal or accounting advice at this point. There's some very specific rules about who must be on payroll and who you must withhold taxes for. So you'll definitely want to consult an accountant. Brett's just throwing us some general ideas here about who is employees and salaried folks are and who is 1099 folks are. But these yard sellers, let's jump back over to them. You hit my question. Are these people
happy?
Yeah,
and so, yeah, I'll start with the beginning. One of the biggest mistakes I ever made was I chose to give kind of my golden information to someone who I didn't even trust in the beginning, right? So that's why it always starts with your trust factor with someone. And they weren't bad or anything like that. And I actually, my biggest mistake is I never invited them to be a part of my team. I should have done that in the beginning. So look, if you're confident in that you're building a great team culture and that you're going to honor those people and you're truly building something for them, you will be shocked at your defect rate. Our defect rate is still zero, to answer your question. No one has ever left us. And most of the time, people want to quit their full-time job to come here. I actually just had another team member who we're training right now. He approached me yesterday and said, hey, I'm working full-time at X place, which is a good job, but I want to quit and come work for you guys. And he's been with us for 3 days. And so, you know, it's a testament to the culture that we've built. But at the same time, you know, you have to be aware that anytime you're bringing a person in, you have to trust them. So starting with that, to answer your question, most of these people don't want to run a full-time business. So when you're talking about buying something from them and giving them a small margin on top of it, but they don't have to worry about the sell-through rate. They don't have to worry about the storage. They don't have to worry about anything except getting up early on a Saturday or going to a retail store, loading up their car, coming and dropping it off at a place. They love it. They're not interested in the long haul of it. They're interested in that nice, short, quick hit, and they get their margin. That's the type of person you want in it. Now, as far as incentives, we do have – that's the base. That's like the base of what we're going to do with them. And again, remember, this is specific for our yard sale teams. Our hourly people are different. But typically with our yard sale teams, that's what we do. And so anytime they hit certain parameters, so I'll give you examples. If it's well over $500, we'll throw in extra bonus. I'll give you a case example from someone this weekend. Someone this weekend bought it was actually one of our newest garage sellers, and she got $875 worth of stuff for, I think the grand total was $45. She spent $45 for $875 worth of stuff. So we loaded on the bonuses for her. We paid her, I think at the end of the day, she worked 4 hours and got about $125 in pay.
Cool. Now, how did you determine 875? Where did that number come from?
So we have spreadsheets that they all have to fill out when they come back, and we pay them while they're filling it out, but we allot time for it. And so they come back, and that's kind of their invoice. So like I said, they're submitting their goods to us, right? We have the commitment on the other side. We're going to buy almost all the time, you know. But at the same time, it's a great way to grow your team and make them accountable for what they're bringing. So they have to fill out the sheet, and the sheet consists of product name, what platform it's going to sell on, how much it's listed for, and then how much you paid for it. And then at the end of it, we have an estimated return on investment. You know, we have their average margin. So it's a pretty detailed list. And they have to submit that to us. And we actually, again, I don't actually oversee the garage sale. I have a person who oversees our entire garage sale thing. I just come in and get the numbers typically, you know, every 2 weeks, something like that. I like to look over the numbers. But he's the one who looks over everything and makes sure everything gets out. But he gets the form. He looks over it. He determines the bonuses based off a structure, like the structure we're talking through. And everybody knows that that form is really the most important thing to submit. It's like an invoice, and they get paid based off of that. So it's a great way to keep people accountable and kind of walk them through the process. So that form was a big part of when we were growing that out.
Now, is that form something you'd be willing to share a blank version of, or maybe the like a sample filled out version? I mean, we're adding a lot of value to this.
Yeah, I have to find, I'll have to ask my guy for him. So, like I said, I've been pretty. I enjoy Groton, so I'll go once in a while. But because my wife loves finding vintage furniture. But I'll have to get the form from him because I mean that is the beauty of when you're growing out your teams. This guy was one of our original garage sealers. He knows it like the back of his hand, and he's built it to something amazing. And really, I've just kind of been his cheerleader from that point on. So it's a
That's
testament to when
beautiful.
you grow the right people in it. Yeah.
Yeah, so your system's always improving. I imagine you've added a few columns to that spreadsheet over time of things that, like, hey, you
Right.
know, we should be collecting, you know, what time of day or what part of town or the address of where the yard sale
Exactly.
was. And, you know, so you
Yep.
add all this new information constantly to your spreadsheet that just helps you know, later data mine for, you know, where's the opportunities? Like, wow, the south side is a gold mine. You know, we should be
Right.
concentrating more people there or whatever. All right. So, well, that's cool. That's just incredible, incredibly valuable information so far. People who are still listening, they listened to the first interview and they've listened to this far into this one. I can tell you they're on the edge of their seats. This is such cool stuff. And I'm learning as we go too. So I really appreciate your time doing this for us.
Yeah.
What about tracking expenses? There's a lot of deductions that go into jumping in your car and running around and shopping all day. The mileage and the, you know, even if you have a meal out, you're kind of working on the road. And, you know, do you help people track that and you train them on how to track that so that either you get the deduction if they're, you know, an employee or they can get the deduction themselves? Have you done any training along those lines with your folks?
Yeah, and so I'm glad we talked about that spreadsheet. Basically, when you move towards a professionally managed operation, you can't it can't be as loosey-goosey as it once was. And so really everything's based off of a standardized sheet of some sort. So remember, the way everyone sources is different. So if you're just doing wholesaling and you're a person who has hired a team member or has a team member who does all your purchasing on wholesaling, that's going to look different than someone who's doing retail arbitrage and driving to stores. That's going to look different than someone who's going and doing online arbitrage. That's going to look different than someone who does just garage sales or someone who does coupons. So there's all these different models inside of it, or liquidations, like your LIT course. The most important thing is you could take these skeleton models, you know, like, so let's take my spreadsheet for yard sales, right? You can take that and adapt it according to what type of sourcing is working for you. And so the most important thing when you're tracking expenses or anything like that is you have to be aware of what people are doing and then add it to that sheet so that they are accountable for putting it on there. So yes, everything we do, mileage, time, car depreciation, you name it, it's on that sheet. And they have to come in. Every time they come in, they have to fill that sheet out. And so it's just a great way, and it's a great way to truly be the CEO of your company, because you're really just using that data as navigating your ship as opposed to being the one out there doing everything, filling in the sheets. You know, you have to get comfortable with training people and holding them accountable for the standards you put in place.
Beautiful. And I'm sure it's a constantly improving system. It's not like you guys have got everything figured out. I'm sure there's a great new idea almost daily around there of like, oh, we should be tracking this. And or here's a more accurate way to bonus everyone, you know, just get the numbers
Right.
more accurate and that sort of thing. So, but just the shell, getting a peek at the shell of the structure that you guys have is really good information.
Yeah, and that's the fun part, Jim. Honestly, you know, I mean, going out and shopping is not that fun. Building a new bonus structure or a new way to track something or identifying a new opportunity, that is super fun. And it's what I love to do every single day, as opposed to, like, if I had to wake up every day and I was the guy who had to go shop, I'd be bummed. And so for
Right,
me,
right.
you know, this it's just a, it's super, super exciting.
Well, that's the beauty of it. Maybe there's someone who's listening to this recording right now, and the thought of actually tracking the numbers is like freaks them out, but they'd love to shop all day. So we're
Right.
not saying you have to have Brett's personality or my personality to do this, but we're saying you need kind of a combination of talents and interests, and this allows you to build a team of, you know, different people with different passions. And you know, it would kill me as well to have to go shop or yard sale. I can't stand getting up early and doing it. You know, every once in a while I'll find myself up early and I'll go do it and I'm like, oh, what was I thinking? That was, even though I go out and make $500 or $600 for an hour's work, I'm still like, oh gosh, I just feel like I wasted my time. It doesn't do it for me. But like you said, I'm more the systems guy too. But we're going to support every angle of this. Over time, we're building a community of people who are doing this. So you want to be a part of our community. And you know, as you find good solutions, if you're listening to this recording now and you found a better way or an interesting way to do things, hey, share it with the rest of us. We're all trying to build our businesses here. Let me ask you this one, and I know everything starts with trust. I know you're going to say that as part of your answer, but who all has access to the online accounts? Like for your Amazon account, how many people in your organization can log in and upload items into FBA versus is that just like one person who's assigned that task, or is the whole team kind of doing it teamwork-wise, three or four people logged into the same account at the same time? How's that work?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I have multiple answers to it, but I'll give kind of my general one. Yes, multiple people have access to all of our accounts, meaning, you know, Amazon, eBay, anything like that. But here's the rule. Only in our office, because we do have people who oversee every step in the office, it's computers we have in the office that we have bought specifically for this business. And so, meaning that computer doesn't go home. It's actually, we buy Google Chromebooks. They're $200 to $250, so a pretty minimal investment. And they're mobile. We can do a lot with them. We bought about, I think we have about five or six of them in the office, and we bought them over time. And they stay there. They don't go anywhere. And so that minimizes any problems on login or potential hazards. And then anybody who's outside of our office who's part of our team in some way, shape, or form, we run everything over Google Docs at that point because I can't oversee the possible abuse of an account, which is very scary. We limit that, and we just, you can run most of the remote stuff can be run over Google Docs anyways. So I hope that answers most people's questions.
Yeah, that's a great answer. And for people who aren't familiar with what Google Docs is, I mean, there's maybe some people who don't. I mean, my 14-year-old uses it to do projects with, you know, a dozen friends from around the world. So I know everyone younger than us knows what it is, but we have some who may not know what it is. Gmail is free. You can get a free gmail.com. That's Google's email service. And when you sign up for a Google account of any kind, you have access to Google Docs, and you can share a spreadsheet or a document or a presentation. In this case, it's primarily spreadsheets that we're talking about sharing, where people go in and they can see all the same columns everyone else does. They can add in their data. They can add in their information. Two or three people can be working at the same time even, and it just keeps it all. It's collaboration. It's a really cool collaboration tool that allows multiple people to work on the same document. So everyone can put their hours on the same spreadsheet, or, you know, you just organize. And I'd be curious to see what the structure of what kind of Google Docs you guys have. Maybe that's something that we could include as a resource for this is, you know, here's some of the Google Docs that we all use every day, and you just list them out. And the ones that you don't mind providing a blank example for is like, hey, this is what it looks like when it's not filled out. Here's the columns. Here's the one we use to track, you know, mileage, or you know, just the way you're structured. Anything like that that you could share with us, I'm sure would be invaluable so people can save some time as they're setting this up for their team as well.
Yeah, they're pretty simple. I'd be happy to share them. And then the one thing I should have mentioned, when you're using Google Docs, there still is one more step at the end of it, meaning what you're doing is you're limiting people's ability to log into your accounts or manage your accounts or even do any potential hazards to your account. So what happens is you do have one more step at the end. All that data is on your Google Docs, so basically it's on a spreadsheet and or multiple spreadsheets. So you still need someone in your office or in wherever you are who you trust and who's kind of overseeing that. They need to put that information into your account. So you do have that one extra step, but really it adds, like, you know, it's not that much of an increase at the end of the day. If all the information is there and all the person's doing is inputting data, it goes by pretty quick.
Okay, so let me clarify something because I think I may have misunderstood you. So let's say you have 20 people that shopped today and they all bring their stuff back. They fill out their Google Docs spreadsheets and they're all combined into one big spreadsheet. Now, you have one person then that uploads that information into Amazon or eBay. Is that correct?
We have multiple. But I'm saying if you're building this out and you have one person that you're kind of looking at right now, which is probably where most people are, you have that one person input the stuff. So for us, anybody who comes in our office, which is the majority of our team, but we do have, like, we have people in different states doing it. We're actually launching a new team in Arizona, and I'm in California. And so anybody who's outside of our office, those are the people who are mainly using Google Docs. If at any point in time they
come
back,
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Because you have to be in the office to get into the Amazon account.
Right.
I like that rule. You can't get in from home. So they're just submitting their information via spreadsheet. And someone in the office then who's logged in, whose time's being tracked there in the office, there's a greater degree of accountability there. And even though I'm with you. I mean, I have a guy in India who I've never spoken to, never met. I saw a little picture in a profile on odesk.com, hired him. He does all of my eBay listings for us.
Right.
I give him full, complete control over the – I mean, he could destroy my business if he wanted to, but he has no incentive to do that. We're paying him well to work for us. And if there ever was an issue, it would just be a matter of contacting Amazon or eBay saying, hey, our account was hacked. We need to change our password, whatever. It's a pain in the butt, but you can get it all back. No one can truly destroy your business. With PayPal, it's something I've learned too. You can have multiple different access levels into your account. You have some people that can only see the balance and give refunds, and that's it. You know, or they can log in and see the transactions, but they can't see the balance. Or, you know, there's all kinds of levels of most services now, like eBay, Amazon, they're starting to recognize, hey, people have employees that are logging in. They don't necessarily want full access. So there's levels of protection that you can put in there as well. And I'm sure, you know, that's only going to get better over time, because the reality of having other people in your account, you know, it's just the reality of a lot of businesses with multiple employees.
Right. Yeah. And I will say, really, the outside people who don't come into our office, it really wasn't a trust issue. It was more of a logistics issue. So imagine on a Monday when we had 20 teams come back, right, and everybody's processing their stuff and loading up shipments. What I noticed was the people who aren't coming back to the office and able to talk to each other, if I have someone in Arizona and they're doing the same exact thing, nobody knows what that shipment is. Nobody knows, and it starts to confuse everyone. So it was really Google Docs that allowed the collaboration and bringing together multiple people outside the offices to be able to communicate and understand and see it before it kind of got all crazy inside the account. So, again, remember, like we talked about it, I trusted these people in the beginning. So it was more logistical than, like, my fear of them hacking into my account. So.
Gotcha. It was more of a logistics issue. It was never really a trust issue.
I'm
with you. So I imagine you guys have weekly meetings or biweekly or whatever. I mean, we've got a picture of your whole team kind of, you know, hanging out and having a good time. Everyone's dressed casual. I mean, that's got to be a great feeling, you know, just like.
Oh, it's awesome, man.
You've got these people and they're building something that you all believe in and enjoy doing, and you're serving your community and having a great time doing it. But what kind of topics, anything interesting come up? Like, what problems have you guys solved, or have you learned anything about, you know, here's kind of the agenda that we stick to, you know, help us manage our team as it starts to grow. Give us a little bit of advice. Just brainstorm on that topic for us for a minute.
Yeah, no, it's funny. It's funny between what you think it's going to be like and then what it actually is. Right. And so, first off, the fact that I'm even overseeing multiple teams for online businesses, it almost makes me laugh. Because 4 years ago, I was the guy who was like, am I ever going to make a penny online, you know? And now all of a sudden, I'm like this captain of like a team, of multiple teams, and, you know, running all this money. It's just, it's crazy. It's really, when I sit back and I get to do these phone calls, it's just nuts that I even get to talk about it. So this is actually my favorite thing to talk about, is the growth and inspiration of your team. And so first off, the most important thing when you're meeting with a large group of people, or even if you just have one or two team members, you have to make it about them, right? They don't care about making you a ton of money. Nobody does. That gets no one excited. They care about them and then what they can do and being acknowledged and being, you know, given awards, everything like that. That's what they love, right? So first thing, don't make it about you. Don't even make it about your business. Make it about them. So we do a weekly meeting. The most important meeting that we do is Wednesdays, and we try to limit meetings because I hate meetings, man. So my meetings are, like, you know, minimal but important. So I don't overdo it on the meeting side. The most important one we do are Wednesdays, and it's an hour long from 12 to 1. I go buy everyone lunch. It's an all-team meeting. So this past week, I think we added three new team members. So we had, I think, our highest attendance so far. And we get together, and it's really to revolve around estate sales, thrift stores, and garage sales, and Craigslist. So basically all these kind of one-off type of buying. Meaning, you know, it's the stuff where people are handling cash. It's the stuff where we have multiple teams going out at the same time. And really, it's an opportunity to bring all these different minds together in a constructive and structured way so that the people, the three new team members, can get a glimpse into the team member who's been doing it for 2 or 3 years, right? And so the idea behind it is you want to catch those people up who are just starting. But you also want to reward those veterans with the ability to speak to others, you know, to even we give out a lot of our bonuses at that time. So what we did this week, we give out an award for the highest grossing product. So what that means, you know, the highest valued product. So this week someone got a $500 printer. So we give out it. We literally pull out a $20 bill at that moment and we go hand them a $20 bill. And then the other one we give is the highest profit for the weekend, and that went to one of our newer garage sellers who got, like I said, I think it was like $875 worth of stuff for $45. And we walk over, hand her a $20 bill. Coolest thing is, I kind of say a couple of things at this meeting. Again, the manager, the person who oversees the garage sale, I really work with him to help him inspire the team because I don't want to be the guy. You know, like that's always my thing. I don't want to be the guy. And so, you know, try your best always to build yourself out of the situation. Don't build it around you. Other things we go over is availability for the week. Wednesdays are our standard day for, hey, you need to tell us what you guys are going to be available for this week so we can map out. Because you got to imagine, when you're sending out even 10 team members for a weekend, that's a lot of, you know, scheduling, right? We have to grab the money for the weekend. And so, you know, we really need to know availability. Availability is really important. We then go over research. So we talk about different things we're finding, you know, kind of like on a pulse of like what's out there in the reselling world. So we talk through different things we're seeing on Craigslist, different things we're seeing on garage sales, because for us, you know, garage sales change in the, during the season. So you get this chance to have kind of like a mastermind collaboration. And then the probably the third and most important thing we share a hot selling product, you know, because this is our team now. So we could share everything in the kitchen sink, right? And so we just kind of start to roll through. This is selling, this is sold. We're seeing this trending. Look out for this. We're now seeing these at garage sales. And all of a sudden our teams, you know, are kind of growing their palette of what to buy. Because a lot of these guys have no idea, right? They're just, some of these are just college kids who are going, hey, look, this is a cool atmosphere, but I have no idea what you guys do. So you have to catch them up, right? You have to give them a brain download. We share documents at that time. We a lot of times, Jim, you know what I do? I go and buy information, so I'll buy any great training or anything like that, and I don't want to learn it, you know? And I just go, all right, guys, here's the training I saw on eBay. Here you go. And we kind of go over it. And so it's just great time to bring all that information together.
That's great. I imagine that the script kind of almost writes itself as you get a few good leaders and you get some interesting ideas and they're kind of driving the ship. And I love what you just said. You said it very casually, but it's key. It's vital. And you instinctually, I think maybe it's your ministry background showing up. You instinctually, though, want to serve the people in your organization versus wanting to rule over them and we're going to do it my way and how can I kind of twist people without upsetting them and so they'll do it my way and make me the guy at the middle. You don't have those instincts. And I've been around ministry long enough too. I think that's probably where I learned, like, as soon as somebody makes it about them, game over. And I see right. That mistake being made, you know, just to kind of make a side note here. In the internet marketing world, there's so many strong, dynamic, entertaining, funny, energetic personalities, but their organization is all about them. And if I had to identify a secret sauce to the success that I've had and to the success that guys like you and so many others, that I could just kind of my circle. If you drew a bullseye around these circles of influence that I have, you got the big general crowd, the people who are like, yeah, I think I've heard of that guy, all the way down to this small circle of people who are really hitting it. They really get it. We're kindred spirits. Inside that small circle in the middle of the target, it's all people who think the way you just described, which is, I'm not here to make my life great, although that's a nice side benefit of serving. But I'm here to serve the people around me, not just my customers, but my employees and those people who come into my life and who work for me and with me. I want them to feel like I'm serving them. I'm sacrificing for them. And we both benefit. That's God's formula. When I give, 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 I get blessed for it.
Right.
And we understand that. It's just God's nature. It's the way the world works. But if you don't understand that, it can be kind of frustrating building a team. And if you want to get the right mindset, I'm going to recommend again a book I've recommended in the first audio that Brett and I recorded, Entree Leadership. It's a great book for getting your head on right. It's by Dave Ramsey, Entree Leadership. He grew his organization from his garage, a couple people, up to 250 people. So it's going to be a lot of these concepts, but it's more of the the day-to-day stuff you're going to face, schedules, and what kind of people should you hire, and how can you have a good hiring process. And we're not going to pour through that, because people smarter than Brett and I have already been down that road and written great books about it. But we're talking more specifically about this kind of business and the specific challenges you'll run into in this business. But I think that was a good side note for everyone, that if you don't have a servant's heart, you're not going to make a great leader. It's that simple.
Right.
So work on having a servant heart before you even try to attempt to do this business model or any other business model where you're leading people. Because no one wants to work for a jerk. But people will lay down their life and their time and their schedule and their energy and their money for someone that feels they feel like they can follow, because they have your best interest in mind ahead of their own, and they're truly serving. And it sounds like that's the kind of team that you've built. So that's to be commended,
Yep.
Brett.
Thank you.
There's a couple of things that I want to get through. I don't want to keep you too long, but we've made it about halfway through my notes. Well, no, we're well past halfway, actually. Have you done any? You've mentioned you've done some competitions with your team, and like, most profitable, who brought in the most, and how accurate would you say your numbers are, and how much time do you spend pouring into keeping every line accurate so you know exactly who actually won the most pro? Like, some weeks it's easy. Other weeks it's like, man, that was close. And how do we, because I've been in sales before. I know one of the most frustrating things about being a salesperson is when you feel like you don't really control your own destiny when it comes to the bonus. But that's also one of the more difficult things to do. So without giving us all the nitty-gritty details, give us a shove in the right direction. And if there's some little lessons you've learned, how detailed is that tracking for you? How difficult is it to track those things?
The initial build-out's a little herky-jerky, but once you get it, it's not bad, because the most beautiful thing, and Jim, you pointed out, we're in a new time and world where all the information we ever need to access, we could go online and find it. So when people bring back their inventory, there's really no place to hide or fluff or do anything, because if they're bringing it in and you're looking it up and helping them understand so that you're empowering them for the future, there's not really a part where you could, mess up on the value of your inventory, right? So the best thing about what we do is when they come in on a Monday or Tuesday, whatever day, we've built a checkpoint where they have to do a nice review of what they brought in, right? And so we're at a point now where our seasoned veterans can, we can kind of do a bird's eye and get an idea. But the new people who come in, a lot of it's like a step-by-step, like, all right, hey, so see this camera? You thought it was worth $435, but look, this is used, and it's really worth $130 in good condition, because see, look at the lens, da-da-da-da-da. And that's the beauty of a build-out, is you get those first round of people coming in. Next, you have them be the people who oversee. And then after that, you eventually have a manager or a person who oversees that entire division. And so, to answer your question, between competitions and bonuses and everything like that, first off, if you do well, you get a bonus. It's not even in competition with another person. Second is the competitions that go among each other are just cherry on top stuff. So you want to make sure that people are paid well. You want to make sure they get bonuses no matter what. And then on top of it, the cherry on top stuff is it's all verified. You can't hide from information now. And being able to check all that stuff is actually super easy.
Yeah, I guess all the numbers are pretty straightforward. There's not a lot of ambiguity, and it's pretty easy to directly reward people for their product because we know who brought product X in, and then it
Right.
sold, and maybe it sold for significantly more than we thought it might because we put it on eBay
Right.
and it went nuts. But so you can report those final numbers, and the math isn't real tricky. So
Right.
yeah, I guess as long as you're keeping your numbers accurate, it becomes a pretty straightforward game of
Right.
rewarding those who are doing well and. And truly treating them like team members versus employees, regardless if they're actually an employee or not, by the legal definition, everyone's a team member. And so
Right.
when there's a great quarter, I know I've done this with my team. I've just surprised them with a nice chunk of change. And it's like, hey, we
Right.
had a great quarter. We had a great 6 months, guys. Here you go. Boom. And just out of the blue. People, and
Right.
that really goes a long way toward, make them feel like they're appreciated. So yeah,
Right.
as your business
And I
flourishes.
will say, with bonus structures, be careful. And so, first thing you want to do is you want to start low, not high. And so, if you start super high and then you're like, oh crap, never mind, I got to lower that, they're going to be bummed. And so, make sure you start low, not high on it. That was the lesson I learned the hard way. Because I wanted them to be super happy and excited. But at the same time, I didn't want to, now I know, like, I don't want, that can bring the morale down. Next is, if you're just starting out with a bonus structure and, like I said, I started this with $400. So cash has always been tight, for a period of time inside the business. And if you're talking about bonus structures and everything, you have to be careful with about upfront bonuses compared to sell-through bonuses. And so upfront bonuses, I would probably lay off that until you kind of have the rhythm of it. And the backside bonuses, what you can do is you can put the accountability on them. So you make kind of the initial spreadsheet of what they bought, so they can fill it in. And then we actually have a lot of our new people track the sell-through of those products, and we cross-compare. They have to give us kind of a download of, hey, you thought it was going to sell for this. How much did it actually sell for? And then we can kind of run through the profit numbers at the end of it, and then bonus out from it. And so that, I like, if you're starting off, I actually like to tie it through the back end than the front end. And especially what that does is it really tests your team members to see if they're in it for the long run. Because if you kind of tell them, oh, we'll track the sell-through and everything like that, they might go, forget this, I'm out. And that's good. You want them to burn out before you invest a ton more time and money into them.
Right. Great advice, man. I'm looking at one of the other more interesting questions, and it may seem like one of the more obvious ones, but and this is again, this is one of those that we could do a whole probably hour segment on, but it's also one where I think if you spend 2 minutes hitting it, we'll get 90% of what we need, if not more. And that's this. What is the basic training knowledge that you want in my head if I'm standing over an item at a yard sale and I look at it and like, there might be value here. What app am I pulling up on my phone? What metric am I using to make that decision? Am I pulling up eBay and looking at the recently sold items? Am I pulling up Amazon, an Amazon tool and saying, oh, this has a low enough rank and the price is different enough between what it's selling for? And is there a formula there? Is there a standard there that has to be met? Or is there a lot more instinct involved?
This is a great question. And so, and I answer it almost every week. So it's a pretty one, easy one for me to answer. Number one is it new or used? Okay. So if it's new, you're going to be checking Amazon. And here's the apps you can roll through on Amazon. And this is a priority we give them. Number one, we use Profit Bandit because it kind of does all the work for you on the side of, calculating returns, everything like that. Next, we use Amazon Price Check, which is a free app. After that, we use Amazon Seller. So those are three apps right there that will put money in your pocket. Those apps are used in that order. And so what Profit Bandit does is it tells you your profit, right? If you were to buy that item and sell it at the lowest selling price. So the quick answer to it is if they type in what they're buying it at and the profit is four times what they're buying it at, then that activates the buy for them. So you got to remember, these people are green and they have no idea what they're doing. That is a nice, easy way for them to know, okay, I won't get in trouble for this. And it's a great way for them to bring back and talk through it. So again, if it's new, it starts with Amazon and then it goes Profit Bandit app, Amazon Price Check, Amazon Seller. I like to use Profit Bandit. If the profit on Profit Bandit is 4 times the buy cost. That's their standard. If they're sitting at a garage sale or yard sale and they see an eBay item, they open up the eBay app, they go to Refine, they go to Show More, and they click on the sold listings. They are only allowed to buy eBay items that have a 10 times multiple, and that it has sold for a 10 times multiple, not the bids or currently selling at. And that's pretty much the baseline, man. That's like, that'll take you 90% of the way.
Yeah, there you go. That's exactly what I was looking for, and I think you almost nailed it right at 2 minutes. I wasn't timing you. That was good. yeah, and I love the 10-time and the 4-time rule. Although the 10-time, man, that's pretty aggressive. I mean, you if it's 8 times, you'll walk away from it.
This is for the new people to keep everyone safe from getting burned. You can progress.
Right.
We have people buy eventually on a 2 to 3 times multiple, but starting off,
right,
these people are going to mess up, you know, and
sure,
you don't want to mess up on expensive stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Is there any bottom dollar limit? Like, never buy anything under $5, even if it meets the 10 time rule. Or,
yeah,
you know,
so on eBay, it has to be above 20, and on Amazon, it has to profit for more than 8. Those are the bottom dollar rules.
Okay, that's pretty low. And when you say 20, you can spend $20 on the item, or you have to sell it for at least 20?
It has to sell for at least 20.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so you are dealing with some smaller, you know, nickel and dime type of items, but at the end of the day, you know, that adds up over time. That's kind of been your philosophy. Are you happy with that?
Yeah, because they're going to pay $2. Because remember, it all just is a numbers game to me. It's not a time situation because I've built out a team. And
yeah,
so...
Yeah.
The 10 times rule keeps that safe because that means they're only spending $2 on that item. That means my eBay guy is going to list that within, you know, 10 minutes. And maybe my total amount invested in that process is an extra $2 to $3 for the person who bought it, or about $2 for the person who bought it, and then maybe another $2 for the person who listed it, right? So that's $6 for the $20 item. That's how I run the numbers on it, and that's why I keep it at a 10 times multiple for people who are first starting.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. And just people may be thinking, wow, how do you ever find anything? That stuff's everywhere. I mean, I imagine coming back with, you know, trunk loads and car loads. I mean, that stuff is everywhere if you'll just get out and do the work, because there's very, very few people, especially with eBay. We said this in the first audio, and I'll say it again right now. eBay has kind of lost some of its luster. A lot of sellers have abandoned ship, but a lot of people are still shopping on eBay.com around the world every single day. Tens of millions of people are snatching up stuff every day. So these yard sales are just, you know, they're being virtually ignored. It used to be if you went to a yard sale 5 years ago or 7 years ago, you'd run into 3 or 4 other eBay sellers there combing through stuff. Now, you could be the only one there all day, all weekend.
Yep.
There's so few people doing it now, but the opportunity is still huge.
Yeah, and the unfortunate thing is most of the time, people, what they say. They say, I'm not going to do eBay because it's not worth my time, okay? That's like the worst way to look at something. You want to look at it from, hey, is it a scalable business? Then get good at building a team, because if there's money to be made in a business, why would you leave that on the table? You know, your time should never be the equation for whether it's a scale, it's an actual business or not, right? It should be the amount
profitable
that you have to contribute. Yeah, exactly.
Is it profitable or not? And can I build a system to support the finding that profit and extracting it from the market? If so, yes, it's a viable business model. That's exactly what we're talking about doing here. And again, this is a business that couldn't have been done 10 years ago. Wouldn't have made sense.
Right.
We're pioneers. As so many
of
the business models that I get into, we're kind of pioneers. We don't. You look to your left and right, and there's no one else within 6 states doing what you're doing. It's like you've never been done before, but it's because this tool that we have available to us, these power tools we have available to us that so few people are actually using the right way, it allows us to do these great businesses. And it wouldn't surprise me a bit, Brett, if you've got a team, you know, 100 people here, 100 people there, and, you know, you've got managers and all kinds of – I mean, it has that kind of potential to just continue to expand and grow. And so maybe someone's saying, oh, I don't want a team of 50 people or 30 people. Even if you just have 1 or 2 people, everything we're talking about here, 1 or 2 people, we're easily talking about $300,000, $400,000 a year
Yep.
business with very high
Oh,
profit
definitely.
margins, and it's just you and one or two other people, and you're not even really working that hard. Just to put some perspective on it. Now, if you work hard, now you've got a $1 million business. If you
Right.
work really, really hard and you're willing to grow, you're talking about a multi-million-dollar business. I mean,
Right.
we're not talking about chump
Right.
change for the weekend here. We're talking about, and all you're doing is you're going to yard sales, you're going to retail stores, you're scanning stuff, you're getting some instincts on what sells and what doesn't. And I know we're seeing it in my business. My mom is excited and we're hiring people, bringing them in, and they're out shopping and finding stuff. And every time I go by the office now, we got stacks of all kinds of cool looking merchandise.
Right.
I don't like taking the kids over anymore because I was like, oh wow, look, 15 My Little Pony play sets. Like, well, okay, those are for the
Right.
business. Well, can I have one? Okay. So it's
Yeah,
always
yeah,
like
yeah.
we're always pillaging the inventory, and
Right.
but it's just so much cool stuff laying around. But it's all, I just see money. It's profit just sitting there in front of
Right.
me. Just a matter of processing it through.
Yeah, and
Okay.
a little confidence booster. Jim, I'm scared to death of eBay. I'm not at all an expert in it, and I think we talked about in the last one, just to kind of put people in motion, you don't have to be the expert, right? All you have to do is
Exactly.
find someone who is. That's it. And you have to be able to build around it. So I couldn't even find 80% of what most of your community knows on eBay, Jim. And yet I would put to the test that within 6 months I'll be one of the largest ones in the community because of the team. Not because I'm awesome, but because the team's awesome.
Oh yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah, we covered last call. I don't sell on eBay anymore. I'm still known as Jim the eBay guy, and I haven't logged into my own eBay account in months, right?
Right.
But I'm still known as Jim the eBay guy. I'm fine with that. And some people have a problem with it. It's just because they don't understand building a business versus working in the
Right.
business and putting your nose to the
Right.
grindstone every day. I'm more qualified to teach it because I've actually built a team that runs it for
Right.
me. Versus someone who has their nose down every day, I can let my team teach you. I've got a community of people who understand these things. I don't need to be the man that knows every answer to every possible question, because that means I'm too busy putting my face in the monitor every day instead of growing a true business.
Right,
So
exactly.
hopefully that makes sense to people. And if it doesn't, send me an email. I'll talk you into seeing it our way, because you don't want to spend your life doing $15 an hour work. You want to
Right,
spend your life
right.
growing businesses. And seeing them flourish and grow, so you can launch
Right.
other businesses, multiple income streams. That's what it comes down to.
Right.
Well, I'm looking through my questions here. We've hit a lot of great ones. I have just a couple more, and I think we can wrap this thing up. But personal items. If someone brings a bunch of stuff from home, is that handled pretty much the same way as everything else, or what's the, do you guys do any of that?
Yeah, so I
Because
can speak
I'm
to
thinking that's a good
two
place to
models on
start with a
that.
newbie. If a newbie comes in, it's
Yeah,
like, oh, I got a
yeah.
bunch of stuff at home,
Right. So there's two ways to do that. One, you can sell it on consignment, which we've done. You just got to make sure you have good tracking, because you'd be surprised even with three team members who bring stuff in. One will sell right away, the other one will sell 2 months from now, and then one will sell like a year from now, right? So you got to make sure you have the tracking set up, and that's as simple as having it on a Google Doc. And you kind of have, Susie brought in XXX, and then you have a sell-through date. It's pretty easy. So you could do it on a consignment model. And then you set that up with some type of profit sharing. Typically, honestly, for me, it's always about that other person. So I don't take any profit from it. I just kind of do it with them. I do it as a way to get them excited about being on our team. So that's me. You guys can do whatever you want to do. And then the other side of it, which I actually like more now, but this is more depending on where you're at cash-wise. When someone comes to me with that offer, I just say, "Great, we'll buy it from you." And so typically we'll do like some type of percentage on top, and if it's great inventory, we just buy it, and then they don't ever have to worry about it again.
Right.
So those are the two models that we run with it. If you want to turn it into a learning experience, I do the consignment model. If they're just literally, you have to be able to gauge your team. If it's more of a money issue, and you can tell like that's their biggest concern, because maybe their car broke down, something like that, right? Then the buying it from them goes a long way. So be able to look at your team and go, what is it that they really want out of this situation, and then deliver it.
Fantastic interview, man. This and there's a handful of other directions we could go, but what I'm trying to do is keep this interview very general, stuff that's going to apply to everyone, and there's going to be specific things to your business that might come up over time. Brett and I and his team and my team and the community that we're building, we are all here to think through and work through this together. So let us know if you have any questions. But one of the things that people might be asking at this point is, okay, so where should I source product? How do I source product? You know, where are the good places to go? And I just want to end this series, at least the second interview, and I think this is probably all the interviews we're going to do, by saying the Proven Amazon course and the community behind it is where you want to go. And there's a discount link. If you go back to provensourcing.com, which is where you paid for this interview, there's a discount link there to purchase the Proven Amazon course, and that is a resource of all the best places, all the best systems, all the best ways. Because Brett and I have talked a lot about sourcing inventory locally with a team. That's just one of about a dozen ways to get your hands on
For
incredible
sure.
inventory. We've got people going to trade shows. We got people that stay home and work trade shows. We've got people importing inventory from China. We've got people doing, and your team can support all these. This is all training that your team can take as you start to build out your team. And that Proven Amazon course is where those ideas are kind of collected over time from great guys like Brett and others who've creatively found new ways to source inventory. That's one of the things that we're really good at with that course. So we could give you a list of 10 ways to go source inventory, and by the time you hear this interview, maybe a month or two or longer after we've recorded it, there's going to be another three or four great ways to source inventory. There's no shortage of inventory. What there's a shortage of is two things: leaders, more importantly, leaders who know how to build systems. If I can turn
Right.
you into a leader who knows how to build systems, you're set. The inventory's everywhere. Within 10
Right.
miles of where you're standing right now, if you're listening to this, unless you're in the middle of the ocean or in the middle of the desert, within 10 miles of where you are right now, there's millions of dollars of opportunity for
Right.
inventory that you can grab and flip. Would you agree with me, Brett?
Oh yeah, I mean, you talked about multiple revenue streams, you know, and that is beautiful. The coolest part about it is eventually you're going to build out multiple sourcing opportunities, which typically leads to multiple streams of revenue. So if when people come up to me and go, this model's not, you can't do it, that, you know, all the sources of inventory have been taken, I literally just kind of laugh and I go, you know, that's totally not true. There's so much opportunity out there. Typically, what people have a problem with is they get stuck in a rut. They do just one thing, you know, and if you're building a team, the most beautiful part about it is that's the easiest way to build out multiple sourcing opportunities. So that's why this interview is really important. You know, really take it to heart. When you build out a team, it gives you more and more opportunity because you're not the main thing anymore. Your time is not your constraint.
That's beautiful. Yeah, great advice. Hopefully, we're giving people a lot of confidence. And that's one thing our nation needs. I know, especially in the United States right now, is confident entrepreneurs going out there building in the face of all the, you know, we're all being told, oh, no one can find a job and the job prospects look horrible and the future economic situation looks terrible. And we're sitting here looking out our window, like I say all the time, watching $100 bills blow around in the wind, frustrated that we can't get other people to see them. It's like, it's right there. Look, I'll reach out
Right.
and I'll grab them. Boom. And I come back. Here's
Right.
$1,000 in my hand. You see what I just did, how easy that was. And like, oh, no, well,
Right.
that'll never work here. That only works there. Only works where Brett lives and where Jim lives. It doesn't work anywhere else. Well, no, our community is big enough now that I too laugh when I hear people talk that way. It's like, this works everywhere. I mean, I've got
Right.
Barrington on an island, literally on a sandy beach island in Jamaica. He's from Jamaica and he's selling product on Amazon all over the globe. There's no
Right.
warehouse in Jamaica for Amazon, but he's one of our big power hitters, right? I mean, I've got story
Right.
after story after story. It takes a little creativity, takes a little leadership. Got to be able to build a system, stick with it. But once you get through it, the opportunity is just vast. So, well, hey, Brett, you're awesome, dude. Thanks for your time. I think we'll wrap it up here and we'll turn this into a transcript and get it out there. And everyone can, you know, for a few bucks, people are going to be able to just get their hands on a wealth of information. And hopefully, we'd love to hear your feedback on what you thought of this course. And like I said, if there's anything else that we can do for you, look up the information on the resource page where you downloaded this interview and where you're listening to it. At provensourcing.com. If you haven't bought it yet and you're listening to it for free, jump back over, do the right thing, and pay for it, and then get access to all the resources that were included in this series at provensourcing.com. Hey, Brett, thanks, man. It's been great, and we'll probably do this. We'll probably a year from now, who knows how huge things will be, and we'll do this again and get everybody up to date on where we're at.
Awesome, man. Sounds good.
All right, Brett. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
See ya.